CliffCentral.com. Jonty Sill is the co-host of, well, the host of, he's the guy who started Sex Talk here on CliffCentral.com. He's a sexologist. There's nothing he doesn't know about the woman or the man's body, how they can bring pleasure to themselves. He would have become a rabbi if you listened to the last time we spoke to him. And he decided, no, this is way more fun. And he knows stuff that none of us know. And he's here to share his incredible knowledge. But we want to talk to him particularly this morning about his experience in an ayahuasca retreat that he did. What was it, like 3-4 weeks ago now? How are you, Jonty? Nice to see you, man. It's very good to have you here so early in the morning.
It's cool to be up so early.
Yeah, I know.
It's cool to be up.
So how's your week been so far?
It's been an interesting week, thank you.
Oh, tell me why interesting.
Interesting clients in my practice.
Have you done yoni massages this week?
I have done, yes. Okay. Just one.
Okay. What else did you do?
It's been a week of people struggling with a lot of relationship issues.
So people come to you almost like they would to a therapist as well. Because some of the problems in their relationships have to do with sex and physical intimacy and all of that stuff, right?
Yeah, and sex and relationship are very linked.
Now, I know we make a lot of fun of sex talk because it's a salacious, you know, show, and there's a lot of subject matter there that is titillating. But really, what I admire about you is that you treat sex the way that someone might treat a business meeting. And I don't mean in a clinical and boring way. I mean like you're passionate about it, you care about it, but it's treated seriously. You take it seriously as if it's a profit and loss situation. Because if people aren't having good sex lives, they really are running at a loss.
Absolutely. In every area of their life, health, business, relationship, work, creativity, it impacts on every aspect of our lives.
Now, if someone isn't having any sex at all, let's say you're celibate, Do we have research that shows that that's bad for you?
It's not bad. It's not good. the reasons are what's important. So if you're making a choice to be celibate, if it's because you have a fear of relationship, a fear of intimacy.
That's obviously bad.
Yeah. If you're making a choice that you choose not to express your sexual energy, that's a different story. Personally, I wouldn't agree with that, but the reasons become important.
Okay. We've had a lot of discussions in the last couple of weeks, and before we get into the ayahuasca stuff, there's some sex stuff we need to get out there. What is it with all these guys in Hollywood that we hear about in the news in the last while? I know you've kind of addressed this on Sex Talk as well, but these Harvey Weinsteins, you've got to explain to me how an unattractive man like that, what he's doing when he walks out in a bathrobe and he jerks off in front of a girl, a beautiful actress. What's happening there? Like psychologically, sexually, can you help me understand why anyone would think that was acceptable behavior? And what does he expect to happen? Like, does he really think she's going to go, oh, that's the best thing I've ever seen. I just love you so much, Harvey. What can I do to pleasure you?
There's a few things. The first is that a lot of people are not taught what it is to be a man in today's world, what that means from a sexual point of view. The masculine energy. We don't have a lot of male role models in our world who are strong in business terms, in politics, in religion.
You know, a lot of people argue, but men everywhere are like showing their might and they're strong.
No, they're not showing that they're strong. They're actually showing that they're weak and manipulated.
Okay, explain that a little more.
They're not creating a space of masculine safety for people. So one of the things that a man does for the people in his life, his relationship, is you create a space of safety. Look at what you've done here. You've created a space that it is safe for people.
Created a lunatic asylum.
Yeah, besides that. But it's a space for people to walk in and be lunatics, but be authentic lunatics.
So you feel safe here. So
that's right.
So what you, in other words, when you are integrated in your masculinity, you don't make people feel unsafe. You're meant to make them feel safe and able to express themselves and able to be themselves without judgment.
That's it. And then there's the money and power that these guys have, which they think makes absolutely everything okay. When it doesn't.
Okay, what is he getting out of it? Because I understand what he should be doing, because that's what most men should get over themselves and stop being pests and interfering with everybody. But what is he getting out of behaving like this badly? What's he doing when he's disintegrating like this?
It's an ego fulfillment.
What, to jerk off in front of a girl?
Yeah, it's a little boy who was never fully satisfied as a man, and it's a little boy behavior that's coming out in a sexual way.
Wow. So he's stuck.
in being a little boy. And a lot of men are emotionally, at some point in our lives, something traumatic tends to happen. We tend to get emotionally stuck at a certain age. So we have these bodies of men, we have these lives of men, but emotionally we're these stunted and stinted creatures acting out as little boys. They've never owned their sex, their genitals, their cocks. They've never owned the power of that. It's never been connected to their hearts and their minds. And there's no respect in it for themselves or someone else.
Externalized.
Totally.
When you say that they've forgotten to, or they're not being taught to be men anymore, did somebody forget to teach them? I don't, like, what went wrong?
Yeah, I think.
Or have they never been taught to be men since day one?
No, they've never been taught. They've never been taught that it's okay to have feelings, for example. How do you express anger in a way that's appropriate, that's acceptable? How do you feel? How do you talk? How do you ask for what it is that you want sexually? How do you go into your sexual desires and your fantasies, even the ones that are socially unacceptable, and own those and say, yes, this is mine. Understand it's okay to express that. It's not okay to express this, because that's contractive and that's destructive.
Could you go and advise people like Harvey Weinstein for money? Like,
fuck, a shitload of money, yes.
Okay, now that's that. Why doesn't this happen? Women don't do this.
Well, it happens, but not as much and not in that way. And as a generalization, women are more emotionally connected. But the opposite end of the spectrum then is that women are become more sexually suppressed. So our society has made it okay for a man to behave in a sexually open way, but it's not okay for a woman because she's a slut and a whore. So if you and I go out and we have lots of sex, we know Sia thinks about it lots, but we have lots of sex, and we are heroes and studs. And if Mabs goes and have lots of sex, then she's a slut and a whore.
I'll do it anyway.
Good for you.
She's not. Yep. That doesn't.
Good for you.
No. She's not bothered by that at all.
She doesn't wait for Christmas to bring the holiness of it all.
But I think with a lot of women, that realization starts coming as they get older.
Yeah.
They start caring less about what the men think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what the other women think, because that's also part of it, right? It's like other women who say, "Oh, careful of her. She'll steal your husband."
Yeah, women judge other women much more than other men or men do.
Yeah.
What is it about the guys, though, that they use power and money? You said earlier that it's because they think they can get away with anything.
Yeah.
But are most men predisposed to that kind of behavior if they become powerful, or is it powerful men? Because, you know, there might be an element of, like, what makes these ambitious guys successful that also makes them creepy pervs and like, sexual misfits.
Yeah, because they're not integrated into themselves.
But then how do they do well in life? Because surely it would manifest in other places too?
Well, it does. It manifests somewhere. But if the drive for success is so strong and you put so much energy into it, then fair chance it's going
to
happen.
Because I'm trying to think of, like, all the leaders and the great men, and I don't always mean great as in nice people. I mean, like, the people who changed history, the people who conquered empires. None of these people were monogamous, sexually integrated, sensible human beings. None of them were balanced. John F. Kennedy, Napoleon, Genghis Khan, Alexander the Great, none of these people were totally good, balanced human beings. They were all whack jobs.
To achieve that...
Donald Trump.
To achieve that, you have to go beyond a level of right and wrong that most of us kind of adhere to.
Really?
So in other words, are you suggesting, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so throw them out if you don't like them. Are you suggesting that there's an extraordinary amount of psychopathy and narcissism in most of these people who break the rule and make history?
To a degree, yes. I mean, somebody once wrote, I don't remember who, that if anybody actually wanted to be president of a country, immediately that should be the disqualifying factor. But yes, there is.
I mean, our president, Robert Mugabe, Shaka Zulu. You think about all these people. They all had some... There was something like Shaka had this mommy complex. Our president's a philanderer. Yeah. We know this. I don't know about Bob sexually, but there's probably some weird shit going on there.
Man,
absolutely. Donald Trump, we know, right? There's Marla Maples and that whole thing in the background.
There's no integration into the fullness of who they are. And it's possible to be whole in that way. Certain people have.
So, I mean, are these alpha males and then the rest of us are beta males if we behave ourselves?
I don't know that I'd say that because...
I think it's possible.
Like, I mean,
for a guy, now this is where we get confused, right?
Yeah.
As a guy then, if you want to be the best, do you have to be a douchebag like these guys?
No, you don't. I mean, look at a guy like Richard Branson. I don't know all the details of his life.
Yeah.
But he comes out as a really balanced, whatever that means, because that's its own interesting discussion.
I'm sure he's had affairs and things.
Well, he might very well have, but often the more that we think we can get away with, the more that
we try.
We will, yeah.
Wow. All right, let's talk ayahuasca, because we could talk about this stuff all day. You seem to be so clear on these things. It makes so much sense when you say it. Hey, Mubs, we've been umming and ahhing about this stuff for like weeks, and Jonty's just going, there it is. That's what you need to know.
Well, I mean, Jonty knows things that we obviously haven't learned throughout the years that he has specialized in.
So what kind of things do people come to you with? They say, oh, well, you know, our sex life is not going so well. How can you help us?
Yeah, it's some of it's sexual technique. We don't know enough about what to do. We're
bored. Show them how?
Yeah.
We're bored.
Yeah, we're bored. So the biggest sexual problem in long-term relationships is boredom.
Boredom.
Yes.
Because people do the same thing in the same way.
So what do you suggest? Should they start with toys?
No, they learn things like expanded orgasm, sensual massage, oral techniques, tantra, things like that.
Okay.
And then a lot of people come because they don't have intimacy, they don't have connection, painful sex, men with early ejaculation. And some people are just looking to explore their sexuality, the connection between sex and spirituality, possibilities.
Hmm.
So it's a beautiful range of things.
Are we talking white people, black people, old people, young people, rich people, poor people, everybody?
Normally from about 30, 35 upwards.
Okay.
Because before that you think either the problems are not there or they'll go away by themselves. They're there from the time people start having sex. More black people, which is fantastic because
many
of the black communities, people haven't been able to talk about these things openly.
Yeah,
for so
conservative,
long.
Right? Yeah. Sort of like the same problem in the Afrikaans community.
And an enormous difference between black men and women, where black women are waking up more and want more, and a lot of black men are holding on to these traditional ideas and spaces that they have.
Ha.
Shame.
Yeah, it is. Because people could be so much happier and more fulfilled. But you're right.
Shame. All right, tell me about the ayahuasca experience. This is not your first rodeo.
It was my second.
Okay.
My second.
When
rodeo.
Was your first one?
It was about 6 weeks before.
Oh, so you did two in reasonably quick succession.
Yeah, this is a whole new world for me.
All right. What we know so far, Jonty, and this is where you can fill in the blanks for us, because you've had a lot of experiences, a lot of experience most of us never have, right? Because you're an explorer.
Yes.
Okay. The first time you went, I want you to describe that, explain how it differed from the second time, but what we already know is that this is not a getting high at a rave situation. This is not a recreational drug. This is something that people do to have a spiritual experience.
Yeah, it's spiritual, it's learning, it's healing. So I'd met Nathan Roth, you did an interview with him, felt comfortable enough to go and explore this. My girlfriend, Chantal, has been into plants and plant medicine for a while.
Right.
We've been talking about it, the time was right.
Okay, so two of you walked down the garden path together, hand in hand.
We drove down the path to Magaliesburg.
Okay, so what happens?
That's a weekend at a center.
Okay.
Very welcoming, very friendly. There's a whole week of preparation, of dietary preparation.
You can't eat meat?
No meat, no sugar, no salt, not a lot of dairy. So you kind of, it's almost like a detox and you're getting your body ready.
Good.
But the spiritual aspect to that is it's a spiritual preparation.
Okay.
You're kind of turning a little bit inwards. What's your intention with
sure.
it? There's a purpose. So we arrive there. Everybody's very friendly. There's an area where we do the ceremony. There's a big fire pit in the middle.
Is there a big like cooking cauldron?
In the kitchen, yes. So
like one from Asterix and Obelix.
Yeah, so Nathan and his team have been preparing the stuff. It's made of different vines, different plants, and a very specific mixture. And it's a very sacred journey to prepare it because there's intention and purpose involved.
Okay.
In it. So there's discussion before the ceremony, safety procedures, and they create an incredible space of safety, because if that safe space is there, then you can go into the journey that you need. And they do that phenomenally. So, you know, as a teacher on workshops, and especially with sexuality, I'm incredibly aware of that safety. And these guys do it magnificently.
Because you're always worried, you know, that you're going to totally zone out,
yeah.
that something's going to go wrong, that you're going to fall and break your head, or that you're going to throw up all over somebody, or whatever the case may be.
And these guys are amazing. They really are. And subsequently, we've heard about a lot of experiences that obviously haven't been so good.
All right.
Because it's a bit of a bandwagon at the moment. Everybody's kind of jumping.
Everybody, it's very trendy at the moment to be doing ayahuasca.
So we start with all that, and the rules are very clear. Like, once the ceremony starts, you're in silence. There's no phones. You're given plenty help where the toilets are, things like that.
All right.
And then you drink in. So you get a cup of the ayahuasca. It tastes pretty disgusting.
What does it taste like? Can you compare it with anything? Is it bitter?
It's bitter. It's kind of earthy. The two different ceremonies, there was quite a different taste, but it's not pleasant. It's not fun by any means.
All right.
So you drink it, you get a little piece.
How much do you have to drink?
It was kind of, it was probably about...
Like an espresso cup?
Yeah, maybe a little bit more than that.
Do you just knock it back like a shot?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And then you get a little piece of apple to take the taste out of your mouth.
Right.
You have water next to you. You go and you lie down on your nest that you make.
Nest.
And then... Nest. And then
Mubs, you got to do this. Come on, let's go and do this.
And then you wait. And it starts to happen, and it happens differently for everybody, and it happens differently every time. So very often it begins with some kind of nausea that comes up. That can get pretty hectic.
Do you throw up?
Yes, and part of it is. But it's not a hectic thing, but you feel so good once that's happened.
Oh.
And inside all of our bodies, there's crap from the way that we live that needs to come out.
So if I, say, starved myself 24 hours before...
Mm.
Would that help? Because I am terrified of losing control of my bowels, throwing up all over myself or the next person.
No, it doesn't happen like that. That's a myth. You are in control.
Okay.
And if you open your eyes...
You're not like a beast of the field.
No, it's not like that. And these...
okay, all right.
And the people who are there to help this are amazing. You just kind of... They are so aware. And if they think you're in trouble, they're there like that. And they help you. And some people did throw up a lot, others didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's done.
Mm.
And then this amazing journey starts. So for me, it was I saw a light show with my eyes closed that I cannot begin to describe. The colors, the patterns, the fireworks.
Were you in communication? This is what a lot of people say, is like you talk to God or you talk to the universe or there's a universal consciousness.
I was definitely in communication with something. That was much more of me. No, I can't. It was a feeling of connection and of being a part of life in a way that I have never experienced before. Of actually knowing that, but deep inside, not an intellectual knowing.
So chemically, let me help with this because I've done a lot of reading about this stuff. I'm fascinated by neurochemistry and neurobiology and all of that stuff.
That's fascinating, this whole field.
That's an ingredient in the ayahuasca. It's a chemical called dimethyltryptamine.
Yes, DMT.
Which looks, in a molecular sense, exactly like serotonin, except it's got an extra oxygen where the serotonin has a nitrogen.
And that's the key to it, that one extra molecule.
Sorry, other way around. Nitrogen is in the DMT, and the oxygen's in the serotonin.
So it's one extra molecule, and it allows you to access more of your mind than you have before.
Well, your synapses and your nerves communicate. There's dopamine and serotonin that's going through them all the time. That's what fires up your nervous system. That's what gives you thoughts. That gives you motor control, sense, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And what it does is that the DMT fools the neurons into thinking that it is serotonin, but it unlocks a whole lot of other stuff.
And it's the combination of the two vines and the two plants that make that possible, because on their own they don't do that. So it's been used in South America.
It's ancient, right. And something I've been doing for years.
And since then, we've subsequently done some learning and some research with Nathan that other parts of the world have similar...
Here in Africa, acacia bark.
And ibogaine is a big
ibogaine
one in
Africa. In West Africa.
In Egypt. So there's a lot
ancient
of...
Ancient Egypt. The priestly class used to make this stuff.
So it's been around. So the first journey that I had was incredibly peaceful. I don't have a great memory of it, but I came back from it feeling absolutely so connected to life with this incredible desire to live a life of love. But not love as an airy-fairy thing. Not this like, oh, I want to be love kind of thing.
Not kumbaya.
No, no, no. It was a real practical thing to take every moment and say, where am I loving in this and where am I not?
Wow.
And that becomes this
never felt like that in my life.
This incredible internal growth, because you see when you're not.
Yeah.
It's like yesterday afternoon I had a whole screaming fight with MTN on the phone about contracts, and
yeah,
it was not a moment of love.
No.
But the awareness of what I was doing.
So it stays with you.
It's a long, it opens a process of growth and learning. And this is where some people kind of go wrong. You think you're going to go and do this once and all your problems are solved.
No.
Fuck no. It opens you to a world of work because it confronts you with yourself. So if there are ego issues, if there are insecurities, it is going to put them in your face like you cannot believe.
Is that why so many people struggle with it?
Yeah. And afterwards, so the last journey that I did, which was kind of a
but it ultimately is a positive move forward.
It's if you not, do the it's, work
it's
with
not,
it.
In other words, it's not going to take you regressively backward.
No. So the last journey that I did,
because I here's the problem. I'm sorry to bring, because I love this. What everything you've said so far sounds amazing, and I do want to experience this. My worst fear is that it will upset my brain chemistry.
No, it will enhance
and
your
make
brain.
Me and suddenly open me up to things like depression, which I have no understanding.
No, if it's not there, it's not going to.
Okay.
So the last journey that I did, I got this incredibly clear message of, you don't have to suffer anymore. Firstly, you've suffered enough. Secondly, you never have to suffer in the first place. That was a belief that we've kind
message.
Of been given. But since then, Gareth, I have to tell you, almost every day I am faced with saying, what are the choices I am making in this situation that are taking me away from that love and putting me into that space of
suffering.
Separation and suffering to some extent? In my relationship, in my work, in every aspect of my life.
And has it made your life better?
It has, because it has opened my thinking to look at things in a way that I never have before. So I've always explored consciousness and growth, and this has taken this to a new level. There's an amazing guy called Tom Chi. I told you about him last week.
Yeah.
He gives an incredible talk about how knowledge is the enemy of learning. Because when we're in a place of knowledge, all that we're doing is repeating something that we know. We don't learn because
that
we just
quote.
Do what it is
that
we do. This starts to put you much more in the place of learning, where you see things differently. Your perspective shifts. You become so much more aware of what you're doing, of what you're thinking, of how you're doing this.
So because one can never predict how they will react to this experience, do you know of any accounts where people have suffered negatively?
Yes.
Okay. So there is that risk.
Yeah. And part of that is your struggle with it. If you surrender to it, it becomes an amazing thing. But we struggle. So because it magnifies what's happening within you.
Yeah.
So it just shows you so much of who you are. You're confronted incredibly with yourself when you surrender to that. But think of the lives that we lived, the experiences that we have had. A lot of people have had a lot of pain in their lives. A lot of people are depressed, are addicted. And it's becoming amazing in helping treat that and change it. But it's going to bring the stuff up first. So you have to do the work with it.
Yeah, like my motivation, I think, might be a little bit different. I understand that a lot of people would do this for a healing or for a greater self-awareness, right?
Yeah.
I would like to know more. To me, it would unlock what I've heard in descriptions that other people who've done this have said. It unlocks a consciousness, perhaps.
Definitely.
A new level of knowledge and understanding and integration, which is possible only when you can surrender to this sort of process.
Definitely.
And as a control freak, that's scary, but it's also quite enticing.
Yeah, and I see that in my work at the moment. Every day I see how I'm looking at things differently, how I'm able to make more connections for clients. And in my own life, I look at what I'm doing in my relationship. I look at what I'm doing with my daughter.
But is it trippy, I mean, while you're in it?
Oh, yeah, it can be amazing. And some of it is not so amazing. The last ceremony we did a few weeks ago, I had probably about, I have no idea of time in the space, but there was some time of intense physical pain.
And then it passed. No, that's not
good. It passed. And it was just the body releasing something. For some people, emotionally, it's not easy.
I'm keen. I want to try this.
I would say there's no question. And since then, the reading that I've been doing with this, with psychedelics, psilocybin mushrooms, it's been part of life for so long and so suppressed. And it really is the key to a different way of being in consciousness. And it's not this thing that destroys you, because you literally, you go and have this experience.
No, I don't buy that.
It's or 6 hours.
That's like propaganda that you've been told from when you were a kid about don't do drugs and all that stuff. And I mean, I've lived a life like that anyway. I don't feel like I've missed out. But this is people trying to frighten
you. The last journey was at a center at a healing center in Edenvale. We drove there in the afternoon. We had the experience. We sat around the fire talking afterwards. And at 11:30, we drive home and we went to have a pizza.
Okay, that sounds kind of boring.
Well, what happens in the time in between, you would not call boring. It's amazingly trippy. But it just shows you more.
All right.
And from somebody who, for my whole life, I was really resistant to these ideas and substances.
Are there people who become addicted to the journey, to the ayahuasca experience? Is there a risk of that happening?
I think there's a risk of that with anything.
Yeah.
The substance itself is not addictive.
Okay.
Okay, the ayahuasca is not addictive. But I think people might become addicted to the process because they're searching for something. But that's the same way that people would become addicted to almost any process where they're looking for, and that's more about the person than the substance.
Sure.
All right.
We know people who've done like 30 journeys in a year. Did anything change in them? No, because they didn't do a lot of growth work. You've got to do the work.
I want to quickly go to the line. We've got someone on the phone here. Here, go ahead. Hello.
Hi, Gareth. It's Leanne calling. I phoned a few weeks ago to tell you I was also going to do this experience with Nathan. So I did go about 3 weeks ago, and just to reiterate what Jayanti is saying, for me, I hated every moment in the sense that, you know, as much as you know, you shouldn't be going in with any expectations, you kind of do subconsciously, and like you, I'm also a control freak. So I saw all the light patterns and a kaleidoscope of all these things going on, but at the same time, I felt so physically ill and like paralyzed almost. I had such a physical experience, like I don't know what was going on in my body, but like it was going through every organ. And all I was thinking was, oh my God, how is this so life-changing for me? I don't need to be seeing all these friggin', like what the shit's going on, all these patterns, because you're hoping for this awakening and it's not happening. But as strange as everything was for me, I did have that immense feeling of about love and just wanting to be loved and accepted and the world and all these weird things. And I think, Jayanti, you'll be able to agree with me, just the experience in terms of the chanting and the drumming and the songs that
they got drumming? Do they do drumming?
No, but Gareth is incredible.
Oh, no.
They sang.
I'm totally out now.
singing John Legend, John Lennon songs. Singing John Lennon songs and everything. It's just...
All right. Thank you. With every word you say, you're spoiling it more for me. Thank you. I'm going to let you go now. That's horrendous. What a terrible call. I wish I'd never picked that up.
I'm actually more excited now. I didn't know it was a mini musical.
I knew you would be. Yeah, all right. What do you make of that? Do you agree with her?
Yeah, absolutely. There are, as part of the team that prepare this, the music really helps you go into that. And whether you engage with the music or not is irrelevant, because your journey could be that you are not even aware of the music at all. But for some people, it also becomes an anchor. It becomes a place that they can kind of come to, that they can hold on to. And the rhythm of the music takes you... I mean, this last journey we did, there was a woman singing. And for the first time in my life, I saw music.
Someone says here, so
sort through the
that
air.
Sounds very good. Someone says, becoming dependent on a feeling and using a hallucinogen is now considered a sacred journey. What a joke.
Well, it's not about becoming dependent on it. And that's the perception people have. You don't become dependent on it. You become dependent on the fucking antidepressants and everything else that you take. I've become strident about this, I have to tell you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Get off your prescription medicine, you miserable son of a bitch.
That cup of coffee that you just absolutely need in the morning, you're fucking dependent on that.
Yeah. I like being dependent on my coffee in the morning, I have to tell you. So don't interfere with my coffee. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Someone has some words of advice for me. Gareth, you're a dumbass. Some of us have unlimited voice and data plans. We get charged for dialing 0861 numbers from our mobile phones. But if we dial an 011 number or any other dialing code, it's free of charge and we're not billed.
Oh.
I didn't know that.
Do we have an 011 number?
Well, yes, I'm sure we do. I don't know what it is. Innes says, I want to put the Eminem issue to bed. He's washed out and a sellout. Just look at the Trump diss track that he did. It's pathetic. And then this is an interesting one while we're talking about, you know, things we're dependent on. Vince says, I went to my marijuana dealer to buy my weekend shit. Mm. As it's Black Friday, I thought bargain time. I was told by him, fuck Black Friday, you cunt. Oh. I had to pay and walked away with half of the stuff I would usually get. I must get myself a new dealer. Peace out, Team Vince.
Oh, well, shame.
I did hear of somebody who deals, who was doing Black Friday specials.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah.
All right, well, listen, Jonty, as usual, it's been, I think, very, very instructive and interesting to talk to you. We won't miss sex talk today. What are you talking about today?
The elephants in the room. The sexual and relationship elephants, the things we don't talk about and the impact they have on relationships when you don't talk about them.
Ooh, sounds fascinating. Make sure you don't miss sex talk today, 10 o'clock. All right, thank you, Jonty.
Thank you, Gareth. CliffCentral.com.